Religious.
It's equally valid.
CBS presents this program in color.
And now, it's time for the Radio Dan Show. With your host, Radio Dan, and intern Jessica. Tonight, Dan and Jess have a nice chat with screen actor Eddie Deason. And now it's time for Radio Dan.
Welcome, everybody, to the Radio Dan Show. I am your host, Radio Dan. It is Wednesday night, and what's today? It's July what?
12th?
No, it's like the 17th.
Oh, okay.
I think it's the 17th. It's one of those. Jeez, another long week. Does it feel like a long week to you? Only Wednesday.
Oh, yeah. It feels like it ought to be like Friday.
Good Lord, yeah. It's one of those. Actually, you know what? I got this quiz for you. You want to read that to him?
Sure.
Okay. This is the show where I sit and discuss the wonderment and the glory of pop culture. All kinds of exciting, wonderful, pointless things to discuss. And tonight is a rare night here because we actually have a guest. Usually I don't have guests on the program because, well, my feeling on that, Jessica, is that when you have me, it's like already having a star and a guest at the same time. What more could you possibly need?
That's true, but we have had a couple guests. We've had a couple of lead bombs, like our movie reviewer, who was spending our money on hookers.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Then also, we have had one of our favorite authors,
yes.
Jay Cronley.
Yes, we had Jay Cronley on once. That is correct.
And that was phenomenal. And mm-hmm. You know what? We're gonna invite him back on the show around like Belmont and
Triple Crown.
Triple Crown time.
Once it's Triple Crown season, that was April.
Oh, great!
All the way up in April. And We had the Canon Films guy on.
True. That was just recently. That was a couple weeks ago.
And let's not also forget that we had on Roscoe Jenkins from the public access guy from Apalachicola. Oh, no, Tuscaloosa.
Oh.
The relationship advice guy. Remember that guy?
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, he told me to grow up.
That's right. That was his advice for you. That was good advice.
That was very funny.
Anyway, tonight we're going to have Eddie Deason on the program. So get excited about that.
That is awesome.
Eddie Deason was in a lot of movies that maybe you don't realize that you know who he is. He was in Grease. He was in 1941. He was in War Games. He did a voice in the Polar Express. I'm about to burp.
That's disgusting.
I'm trying not to. It's you know, these things happen. What are you going to do?
That's gross.
Yes.
We probably don't mention them.
Also, Midnight Madness, which happens to be a small cult hit. You ever seen Midnight Madness, Jessica?
No.
Okay, here's the plot. It's basically like kind of like a mad world, all right? It's a college. I think it's set in a college. It is. Okay, it's a college. And there's one guy who's like the brain or something like this. And he's come up with this scavenger hunt, right? And so he assembles, you know, like there's like five or six different teams, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like he sits in his dorm with his computer, and you know he like dishes out where everyone's supposed to go and find this and do that.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, and Eddie Deason is the leader of like a nerd team.
Oh, how cute.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not the nerd. He's not the genius guy who's.
Oh yeah, no, he's not the genius. He's one of the competitors. He, like, leads the nerd team. They, like, ride bicycles.
Awesome.
Helmets on and whatnot.
Awesome. What year was this?
It's either 80 or 81, and it's 1980, and that's also the first film from Michael J. Fox.
Oh, well, there you go.
There you go.
We have to ask him about working with Michael J. Fox.
Well, we most definitely will ask the man about working with Michael J. Fox. But before we get to that, and before we get to any kind of other things, other fun items, because I got a few things I'd like to discuss. Jessica?
Yes, Dan.
What was with... What are you Jim Rome with that pause? What is that?
It's phenomenal. It's ridiculous. Can't believe you're even addressing me.
That's the best Jim Rome you've ever done. And you've done the guy so many times. You do that impression, like, constantly. But that one was actually pretty decent. It's all that listening to Frank Caliendo.
I know, right?
Anyway.
It makes you think you can do it, too.
Yes, absolutely.
Anyway. Too bad he doesn't do a Jennifer Tilly. A Jennifer Tilly.
You know, it's very rare that you do a Jennifer Tilly, though.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why.
That's because I have to listen to her first. Oh, I can't just
is that right?
It out.
Well, we could just put on Let It Ride anytime you want.
All right.
Okay? Speaking of Jay Cronley. So anyway, is there anything that's on your mind this evening?
Yes, there is.
Fantastic. Spill it.
Sudoku.
Oh, Sudoku.
Oh, my God. It's like an obsession. It's such a waste of time.
Yes, it is. It is a colossal waste of time, but...
But you know what? It's relaxing and challenging at the same time. And it's something that someone who works out a lot is very happy to have. You know, this has been like a little, I don't know, housewife hit for the past couple years.
Oh, yeah, Sudoku.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I started seeing it pop up in magazines. Like, you know how they have the little crossword puzzles?
Yes, yes. Well, yeah, they have it in, like, the daily paper, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I go to my sister's house, my youngest sister.
Okay.
And she's got a book. And I was like, I don't even understand this. What is this Sudoku thing?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, no, it's really challenging. And, you know, you can't put so many numbers here, and you can't put so many numbers there, and it's right. In a box, and yada, yada. And she's like, once you get your, like, little strategy, it's like you want to keep doing it. Well, I don't know. I was doing, I guess, nothing the past couple days, like, before show.
Mm-hmm.
So I just started gathering up some of my magazines that had them and just kind of doing it and getting into the rhythm and understanding, like, you know, the best, almost, like, strategies.
Uh-huh.
And, okay, so I get home today.
Good Lord.
I get home today from
yes,
work.
Yes, right.
All done. All the magazine ones are done.
Okay.
Okay, and there was only like four I found.
Okay.
I get up.
Right.
Go to the Walgreens.
Yes.
Pick up a Sudoku book. Right. Along with some pencils. Come home and lay in bed and just did like seven of them for like an hour.
God. You went and you bought a Sudoku book.
I went to the store specifically to buy a Sudoku book.
How much did this thing cost you?
Like $2.
Good Lord.
$2 and hours and hours of challenging entertainment.
Oh, God. All right. Hey, that's fine. You know, why didn't you pick up, like, you know, any Connect the Dots books while you're there? They didn't have any?
Do you remember, like, getting those little activity books and they had one that had dots all over and you had to make boxes? And whoever, like, made a box, you'd put your initials in it?
No. I'm sure whatever that was, I probably looked at it and said, this looks too hard, and moved on.
Because
I don't even know what the hell that is.
It's like for two people.
Are you making
like,
that up?
No, there's, like, dots. It's like a grid, right?
Right.
And you draw a line, and the next person draws a line, and the next person draws a line, right?
And then they tell two friends.
Shut up.
And then they tell two friends.
And then if you ever make a box,
right,
you put your initials in it, and then... Whoever has the most initialed boxes at the end.
I see. It's like the monogram game.
Monogram game.
Yeah. You know what a monogram is?
Uh-uh.
It's like where you get like a shirt and it's monogrammed. It has your initials on it.
Oh, okay.
Okay. See, it was a half decent joke, but you know. All right.
What about those? Do you remember like the pictures that were gridded up so that you can draw it by box?
Oh, no. Oh, yes, I do. Yeah, that was something else I would be like, whatever. No time for this. Where's Connect the Dots?
I know.
Where's the maze?
You know, it was like, listen, it's just this box.
Yes.
And all you have to do is draw this line down the middle and through the center. And that's all you had to do, all these little boxes, just draw little bits of it. And it never ended up looking right.
No, it always looked like you know, the deformed version of whatever that picture
is.
I know what you're talking about.
It would have been easier for me to just draw the damn bunny.
Yes, it probably would have been. But, you know, they said maybe she needs a little help. Well, that's all. Okay.
So that's my segment.
That's your story?
Yeah.
All right.
You know, while I was there looking at it, right?
Okay.
There's only one book. There's, like, tons of crossword puzzle ones and they had a couple of like circle the word searches.
Right.
Which to me, I don't know, that's just.
Oh, see, I liked the word search. See? There you go. Go ahead. Rip the word search. Sorry. It was for morons, wasn't it?
No.
Morons like me. It's okay.
But,
I can take it.
They had a book there that had, like, all sorts of different kinds of activities. And I said, nope, I don't want Sudoku and something else. I just want my Sudoku.
Okay. All right. You know what? I've had enough of you. I think I'd rather talk to Eddie Deason.
Okay.
I think everybody else would rather hear me talk to Eddie Deason. All right. You're going to get him on the line for me, will you?
Yeah.
Okay. Fantastic. All right. How about a little dialing music? Oh, you know what? I don't have the dialing music anymore. What a bummer. I got to really manage the drops a little bit better, you know?
Hello?
Hello, Eddie.
Hey, hi, Dan.
Hey, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure.
Hey, Eddie. How are you doing?
Hi, Jess. How are you?
Doing okay.
Good.
Okay, Eddie. I've got a lot of questions for you, sir.
Okay, keep it clean, all right?
First of all, how are you tonight?
Oh, I'm very good. I was just watching that thing you do, you know, the movie Tom Hanks directed. I was just watching it.
Oh, you know what?
I love that movie.
That's a cute little film. It totally tanked, but it's a cute little film.
You know, there's a big special edition DVD coming out with that, and it supposedly has, like, another 45 minutes that was cut out of the film.
Oh, okay, I'd like to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very good.
One of my favorite actors is in that movie, Ethan Embry.
Which one is he?
He was the drummer who ends up going away to, no, not the drummer, but...
The drummer is Thomas Everett Scott.
That's right. He's the guy who ends up going away to the military or to Disney World.
Oh, the guy that did the push-ups.
Yes.
Yeah, I just saw that scene. Okay, yeah, he's the short-haired guy.
Yes, I love him.
Okay, I didn't know what else he'd done.
He's done, have you ever heard of a little high school movie called Can't Hardly Wait?
It sounds vaguely familiar.
Jennifer Love Hewitt is in it.
Okay. Oh, I think I might have seen that, yeah.
You know who's in it? Who was in it at the time? She wasn't very big, but is now huge, is Presley. Jamie Presley.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's right. She is in that. Yeah.
Yes, I did see. She's so cute. I love her.
Oh, I know. She's adorable.
Yeah.
Oh. But, yeah, I love Ethan Embry. But I also love Eddie Deason, too, so.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, Eddie. Here's my first question for you. Now, I've read somewhere that you actually made an appearance on The Gong Show. Is that right?
Yes, that was my showbiz debut in 1976. It was November 29th, 1976. I auditioned for Chuck Barris. Wonderful guy. I got on The Gong Show, and I got gonged. Paul Williams gonged me. Paul Williams, Jamie Farr, who I later did a movie with, were on the panel. He gonged me. And then 20 years later, I met Paul Williams. He's the guy that used to compose, you know, Paul Williams?
Yes.
He gonged me. 20 years later, I met him in an audition, and I go, Mr. Williams, hi, it's nice to meet you. Gong me on The Gong Show. He goes, I apologize. I said, oh, that's okay. He goes, I have to. I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, I was an alcoholic at the time. He said, if we hurt anybody, we have to apologize. He goes, you know, and he sincerely apologized to me 20 years later for gonging me on The Gong Show. He came full circle. I go, please don't even worry. I didn't mind. But he was very sincere about his apology.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So what was
$132 bucks at the time. It was a lot of money. Yeah.
What was your act?
I did stand-up. I used to be stand-up at the Comedy Store, and I hated it. But, you know, I had to get started somehow, so I did stand-up, and with about two jokes left, I got gonged.
Oh, man, so you're almost through.
Yeah, but you know what? Yeah. They were gonging everybody left and right on that show.
Exactly, yeah. It was kind of an honor to be gonged.
Yeah, I would think so. I would think so.
I know.
Hey, Chuck Barrison, I met him years later. I saw him in Beverly Hills. Maybe 25 years later, just walking. I'm embarrassed, totally oblivious. He just seemed really out of it. He didn't know who I was, but he was a very nice man, but he was just oblivious that time. He didn't know who I was. He looked like his eyes were kind of glazed. He just was out of it, I think.
Well, maybe he had just come back from one of his CIA missions.
Yes, exactly. I read that book. Wasn't it a great book?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so now after your appearance on The Gong Show, now what exactly is your first movie? Is it Laser Blast?
Grease was actually the first. Believe it or not, that was the very first one.
Grease?
Oh.
That's why I started at the top. I started out, I lucked out.
Yeah, you sure did.
Yeah. I got mostly cut out, but I'm still in a few scenes. I'm Eugene, and you'll see me get hit in the face with a pie. You'll see me dancing around on the floor, and you'll see me walk down the stairs. And you'll see me in little bits, but my big scene is where I get hit in the face with a pie.
Oh, no, you are definitely part of that movie, yeah.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, because when I mentioned you, that I mentioned to Jessica that we were having you on, that was the first thing that popped in her head.
Yeah, you know what's funny, Jess, is how girls love that movie. There's something the women and girls. I talk to girls. I've seen that movie 50 times. I've seen it 6 times. I've talked to a million girls, and they all say the same. I've seen it a million times. My favorite film. They just love Grease. Guys like it, but women love that movie.
Are you kidding? And not only that, but you're going to get, like, you get, like, 16-year-olds who love that movie, too.
Yeah, it just keeps going on.
I tell you, I can't tell you how many times I've seen that movie.
Yeah, what is it, Jess, about it? What is it that girls like so much?
Explain this to me.
I don't understand it, because you know what? I think it's just the fact that at the time, you know, because the big part about that movie that I recall is the is the cheerleading outfits.
Right.
They're like skirts down to their ankles. So this
just shows you're right.
It shows you the time period
of
this.
Right.
And you got Rizzo, who's all slutty, and she's all talking bad about Sandy. And you got Sandy, who turns bad in the end. You know, or not bad, but she gets all, you know, cool in the end. And you just like the music. And it's just awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know that that really cleared anything up for me, but it was a very good try.
what was your question, Dan? I'm sorry, I'll clarify.
Oh,
were you asking something specific about it?
Yes, no, the question was, what was your first film, and you've already answered that.
It was Grease, and Jessica and I digress, totally,
yes,
but it was Grease.
No.
That's okay, that's all we do for the whole hour that we're on, so it's no big deal. So what was it like on that set?
Wonderful. It was a 2-month party. Imagine the greatest party you've ever been to in your life.
Oh,
it was like that for 2 months. Just the greatest time I ever had. Everybody was wonderful. John was wonderful. Jeff Conaway was a little bit scary. Jeff Conaway tried to fix it up with a hooker. I don't know if you heard that story, but at the time I was a virgin. He tried to get me fixed up with a hooker. I was scared to death. Luckily, she never showed up.
Oh my
gosh! It was a big thing with Jeff.
Oh, see, now that's a good story.
Now he was on
Yes, he was on Celebrity Fit Club.
Celebrity Fit Club.
Yes,
that's
he was.
Right. Did you see that?
I didn't see that.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, we just had a reunion. They came out on DVD again, a new DVD, and I saw Jeff last summer. There was a bunch of us there. John and Olivia weren't there, but a lot of the people were there, and I saw Jeff, and we talked about it. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. How was he doing?
Jeff is, you know, freelancing around. He's just an actor, you know, beating around, finding jobs, stuff. He does a lot of autograph shows. We do shows together.
Okay.
But he's just doing different shows and stuff.
Oh, that's good. Because I tell you, when he was on that reality show on VH1, the Celebrity Fit Club, he was not doing good.
Yeah, I didn't see that. I heard about that, but I didn't see it. I think Jeff's been through some hard times, but, he's a very, very nice guy. But I think he's been through some hard times in his life.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you saw him last summer and that he seems to be doing okay.
Yeah, that is good to hear.
He had a nice girlfriend. They seem like a nice couple.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So Eddie, while you were making Grease, just... like, did you guys have the sense that you were making like a classic film, that you were onto something really big?
Well, you know, it's very interesting, Dan, because it was my first film. I didn't have that, you know, I wasn't like used to that thing, but it seemed that way to me. I don't know how the others felt, but for me, it was a thrill to be there. Yeah, John, you know, you could feel the metamorphosis John was going through at the time. He was kind of like James Dean at that time. Mm-hmm. I don't know how old you are, but if you remember the late 70s, John was the biggest star ever lived at that point in time.
Yeah.
And, you know, we felt there was kind of a magic there. Yeah, you kind of felt the sense something was going on. To answer your question, for me, yeah, I did feel that. I felt like it was a very special film.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah.
Okay, now, after this, tell me about I Want to Hold Your Hand, because I definitely remember watching this movie when I was a kid and really getting a kick out of it. And correct me if you're a big Beatles fan, aren't you?
I'm the world's biggest Beatles fan. I'm a Beatles trivia nut. ask me any question about the Beatles, I'll tell you. I know everything about them. I basically played myself in that movie. Bob Zemeckis is the greatest director that ever lived. I worked for Steven Spielberg, who was wonderful, but Bob Zemeckis is my favorite director. He's the best. And later, he remembered me and wrote me into Polar Express, so that he remembered me from I'm Gonna Hold Your Hand, and then Bob wrote on 1941. And that's how I got Polar Express. Bob remembered me 25 years later and put me in it.
Oh, wow,
that is fantastic.
But I Want to Hold Your Hand was a box. It tanked, you know, it didn't do good at the box office, but it's a very good film.
And you're the big Ringo fan in that one.
I'm the big Ringo fan, and here's a great story. Paul McCartney saw the film. He saw one again, and a friend of mine was interviewing him. His name is Joe Pope. Unfortunately, Joe later died of AIDS, but he was a very nice guy. But he interviewed Paul, and he goes, "Did you ever see the movie I Want to Hold Your Hand?" And Paul did an impression of me. Paul goes, "And the answer, come back." And the answer, Paul McCartney did me, literally. McCartney did me for the honors of my life.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Where's recorders when you need them, right?
Exactly. I would so love to hear that.
Now, all right. Now, after this is, you already mentioned 1941.
Yes, on the Ferris wheel. I threw up. Steven would whip us around on the Ferris wheel, and I threw up. And my big story of that is one day I got to throw up in Steven Spielberg's toilet. It was an honor. I got around. I got nauseous, and Steven's secretary came over and took me. She took me to Steven's dressing room, and I threw up in his toilet. I go, "My God, what an honor. I threw up in Steven Spielberg's toilet." It was one of the great moments of my life.
Now, the one thing about that movie, it's such a spectacle. There's just things are just going crazy all over. But the main image that sits in my head is seeing that Ferris wheel just break apart and go spinning
down the
hill.
Ferris, well, you know, Steven, there's unlimited money when you do a Spielberg film, and they bought a whole Ferris wheel from a circus, the best Ferris wheel. They built it up. So Murray Hamilton and I spent the whole film in that Ferris wheel. And it's funny in the time in retrospect, with the average movie now is like 50 or 60 million. I think 1941 was made for like 41 million, I think, at the time. And that was huge. It was the biggest budgeted comedy of all time. And that was like the critics all going, oh, he's spending all this money and wasting this money. Well, it was only $41 million. But at the time, it was a big deal. And the movie did, I think the movie eventually did make back its money. It didn't totally tank. But, you know, the critics savaged it. And Steven, I don't think, likes it. Steven said, I'm going to spend the rest of my life disowning it. But Steven was a very nice man. He was always nice to me.
Oh, how nice.
So, yeah, I got to have lunch one day, the best lunch I had. One day, Steven, John Belushi, and Dan Aykroyd were there, and they asked me to have lunch with them. So I got to have lunch with them in the commissary. I was like a 22-year-old kid, you know. I'm like, hava, 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 you know, like Ralph Crandon.
But oh, my gosh.
I got lunch. I sat there like an idiot. Then I realized I didn't have any money. And luckily, Steven took the bill. Steven just paid the bill. You know, of course, it meant nothing to him. But to me, he saved me from being very embarrassed because I didn't have money to pay for my meal.
Well, yeah, I'm sure he could just, you know, take it right out of the $41
million. Yeah.
Exactly.
Take the lunch. It's a write-off.
Yeah, exactly.
So how did you film that with you on the wheel? How did you guys spin around?
It was on the Ferris wheel, and they had a thing called a Lumac or something. It was some kind of a device where they would circle around and get shots of us. And, of course, they had a camera on a ladder. It was perched. Murray and I were like maybe 20 or 30 feet in the air. I don't know how high. Maybe it's 50 feet, but it was a very, very big Ferris wheel. They'd sit us. We just sit there, you know, just on the Ferris wheel. They'd throw us up fruit and stuff, and we'd eat up there. Murray sometimes needed oxygen. He was an old man, so they'd have to take us down, and Murray would take oxygen, I remember. He was a very heavy smoker. And Murray and I would just spend the day there, and we'd talk. He'd tell me about – he was in The Hustler, you know, one of my favorite films with Paul Newman. He'd tell me about Paul Newman.
Oh, wow.
And we'd just talk about his films, and we got to be really good friends up there.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, he was a very nice man, Murray. He was a great guy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And Belushi, I remember John was very kind to me. He was always a nice guy, and I'm trying to think if there's anything specific. We just met he'd seen I Want to Hold Your Hand. He was at the premiere, and at that party, the I Want to Hold Your Hand party, I got to sit on the couch alone, and we talked a little. But you know how when you're with a celebrity, you want to say just the right thing, you know, you're trying to be real impeccable. And I didn't feel like I made the good conversation, but he was very nice, and we talked. But you know what I mean? It's like surreal. When you meet John Belushi, you're sitting there. It's like meeting Bob Hope, and it's kind of surreal.
Yeah, I tried to carry on.
You know, you're trying to be half nonchalant, but inside you're like, your heart's racing. You go, geez, what is that? I can't believe I'm sitting with John Belushi. You know, but we talked a bit. And then the last time I saw John, it was like, I think it was about 1981. It was maybe a year before he died, and I came out. Can you curse on your show, say a cuss word or not?
Yeah, you sure can. It's the internet. Okay. Go crazy.
We were coming out, and he just goes, hi, Eddie, how are you? I go, hi, John. And he goes, what's new? And I just been to an audition, and he's coming out. And I go, John, I just had this great audition, but they turned me down. They didn't want me. And he goes, they're assholes. and he walked away. That was the last time I saw John Belushi, but that was our last conversation.
Oh, wow. Oh, how
yeah.
nice.
That is.
A great ending conversation for someone.
Yeah, very fitting. I mean, that was—it's so Belushi, you know, to say that.
I know.
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
Perfect story. Yeah. No censoring going on with that story.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, next one I want to talk about is an absolute cult classic, Midnight Madness.
Oh yes, Michael J. Fox's first film and Pee Wee's first film, Pee Wee Herman's first film.
Yeah. Exactly. So now you play like you're like the head of the nerd group.
Right, exactly. The white debaters, the debater team with white T-shirts. Let's see, I think it was Stephen Furtick's film after Animal House. And Michael J. Fox and I were great friends. I think that was Michael J. Fox's first film, it was. We would sit on the set and we'd talk. We both loved the Twilight Zone. We'd talk about Twilight Zone, I remember. And we would play handball against the wall. He was like about 17, he was a kid. We'd take a Super Bowl after lunch and Michael and I would hit it up against the wall and play handball together. And then the next time I saw him, we wrapped Midnight Madness. Of course, it never went anywhere. Then about 5 or 6 years later, I'm at the studio. A Porsche zooms around the corner, you know, like, you know,
zoom,
it's Michael J. Fox. Hey, Eddie, how are you? He's like, you know, he was the biggest star in the world then.
Oh,
right.
Wow.
I'm Back to the Future. I think it was a Porsche. I don't know cars, but it was a really glamorous sports car. He zooms around. Mr. Hollywood, super, you know, he was a great guy, but he was like Mr. Hollywood then, you know. Hey, Eddie, how are you? Blah, blah. And I'm thinking, geez, this is that little kid I knew from Midnight Madness.
How funny.
Yeah. Yeah, you know,
it wasn't Pee Wee at the time. He played a cowboy, I think, or something in it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Now, that movie has...
He pulls out a holster, he pulls out a gun. He's in the pinball arcade, but you'll see Pee Wee in it. That's his first film.
You know what? I haven't even seen that movie. I feel so embarrassed.
Is that right?
It's not a big film, Jen. I'm sorry, Jess. I'm sorry, honey.
That's okay.
It's not that big of a movie. It totally tanked. But it's a fun film to see. It's like a cable film, you know. Just sit there and just watch it and have a Coke, you know, or have a beer. It's like a cable film, but don't expect anything great. But it's an entertaining little movie.
You know what? I'm putting it on the Netflix.
Well, I tell you, it kind of has it's gotten like a cult following over.
Yeah,
over
I think
time.
So. I've got some emails about it from people. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I would imagine so. So, just before I hit the next thing. What do you get recognized most for when people see you?
Oh, unequivocally, Grease. Grease was the smallest role I ever had, but it was Grease. I always say I'm like one of the guys that was a corpse in Gone with the Wind. I go, those guys that, you know, remember the battlefield scene in Gone with the Wind, all those dead corpses?
Yes.
All those guys that go, I was in Gone with the Wind, and there are all these corpses. And I go, that my role in Grease is so small. Basically, I get hit in the face with a pie. I have like four lines. I say four words. I go, hi, I'm Eugene. I go, it's Eugene. That's my line. I walk up to the screen for maybe less than a minute. But I'm in Greece, you know, and everybody knows Greece all around the world. I get emails from it, letters all around the world from people who've seen Greece.
Oh, well, man. I tell you what, I'm sure that there's a lot more people that were on that film that said a lot less than you did, so.
Oh, well, thank you. That's so nice of you. Thanks, Jess.
Oh, no problem.
See, you know, the movie that anytime I think of 80s, and the first thing that pops into my head is War Games.
Yes, Mr. Potato Head, yeah.
Yes, because that scene is so absolutely hilarious. Like,
thank you.
I have not seen War Games probably in a long time, but I can remember like all of the lines in that little scene where he's talking.
Yeah.
You're talking about the back doors, the whole thing. It's just
so funny. We came on the set and Maury was a total pro. I was kind of like Lex. Those were the days I was churning out all these B movies. And I was on the film, and I didn't study my script. I was very unprofessional. And I go, this film's no big deal. And Maury took me into his room, and he goes, look, this is a big deal to me. It's important. You should learn. Like, he was more professional than me. And Maury goes, I'm going to call you Mr. Potato Head. And I go, that's great. And he ad-libbed that. He called me on the set Mr. Potato Head. Now, my director was actually Marty Brast, who did Beverly Hills Cop. But Marty did the film for about 10 days, and he was fired. They didn't like his rushes.
No kidding.
Yeah. And then I think John Badham took over, and John did the film. But I never worked with John Badham. But when Marty was fired, I go, oh, my God, they're going to cut my scene on there. But luckily, the scene that Marty did direct, who's getting credit, was in the film. But mine was directed by Marty, not John Badham.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And here's another weird story that carries to this day. But I kept forgetting my line. I can say it now, but I kept screwing up this line. I go, it's the new data encryption algorithm. It's kind of a hard word, data encryption algorithm. And I kept screwing up take after take. All morning, I kept screwing up my scene. So Marty Brest takes me, puts his hand around my shoulder. He goes, we're going to take a little walk. So he walks me around the set. I think it was 20th Century Fox or one or two. He goes, look it. I want to be honest. You're costing us millions of dollars. You're costing us hundreds of thousands, whatever.
Oh, my God.
But you're costing us a lot of money. He keeps going behind. He goes, what we're going to do is we're going to write up these cue cards. We're going to write it up there, and you'll read your lines, and that's fine. So I read my whole role on it. We went back, and I read my lines. To this day, I use cue cards. All through Polar Express, the whole film, I use cue cards.
Oh, wow.
I always had a hard time memorizing my lines, but that was the first time I used them. If you look closely at War Games, you watch my eyes, and you'll see me. I'm reading the lines. I could never remember them.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that what Brando used to do?
Exactly what Brando did, yeah. And at the end, we can get into Polar Express later, but just the last day of Polar Express, for 3 months, I used cue cards. And Tom Hanks comes up to me the last day. He goes, you don't need friggin' cue cards. I won't say the F word, but I'll say friggin', but he said the F word. But he goes, you don't need friggin' cue cards. He goes, who are you, friggin' Marlon Brando? He goes, you're not Brando. I thought that was very nice. He let me do it the whole film, but he was like a big brother to me, and he was kind of saying that at the end. He was saying, you don't need this, blah, blah, but he let me do it through the whole film without saying anything. And then the last day, he kind of chided me for that. So I kind of got the message. Yeah.
That's so funny.
That's awesome. Well, you know, good enough for Brando, good enough for you.
Exactly, yeah. Okay, that's another story I just remember. Now that you bring up, just let me tell you one last thing.
Excellent.
Polar Express, Tom was very good friends with Marlon Brando. And he wanted him to make the scene in Polar Express where there's the hobo on top of the train. I don't know if you saw Polar Express, but there's a hobo in it, and Tom Hanks plays it.
Yeah.
But Tom and Brando were good friends, and he begged Marlon Brando. He said, can you come in and just do a little bit in Polar Express? Brando was really sick. This was like 4 years ago. It was like a year before he died, and he was really sick. Tom goes, we'll make it really just come in. We'll wrap it all in one day. Can you do it? Brando, I don't know if he wanted to or not, but he just was too sick, and Tom begged him, and he couldn't do it. But that broke my heart, because I heard the story from Tom's driver, and he just goes, you realize I came this close to do it with Marlon Brando. I mean,
wow.
If Brando was in it, it would be Eddie Deason and Marlon Brando in the same movie. It would have been so cool. But unfortunately, it's one of those great Hollywood things that never happened.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a good story.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Mm. All right, you know what? Since we're on to Polar Express, though, what was that like to film that?
It was very weird. It was weird, Dan. It was like the set was there. There was just a bunch of wire chairs. Like, it looks like a plush train in the movie. But we sat on these wire mesh chairs. It was like the backbone. Like, imagine, I'm trying to describe a seat where they take the stuffings out of it. It was just the backbone. We sat on it. It was just a blank set. Nothing was there. when they wanted people there, they'd have a guy with a stick, and he'd have like a head on a stick walking by. It was all faked, in other words.
Huh.
We did it. We did our body movements. It was the strangest shoot ever. We do our movements. Then they had kids playing all of us, me, Tom, Peter Scolari, and Nona Gay. And they had four kids. We'd do our scene. Then four kids would do the same scene. Like, I'd do a scene with Tom. Okay, I want to go on the Polar Express. And Tom would go, well, you can't go till Christmas. Then we cut our scene. Then a little kid, me, and a little kid, Tom, would go. And he'd go, I want to go on the Polar Express. And Tom's kid would go, well, you can't go till Christmas. And somehow they morphed us into the kids' bodies. We used our – it was me and Nona's voice, but Tom and Peter's voice were the kids' voice. They changed it, but it's me and Nona's voice in it, but Tom and Peter's are different.
So –
hopefully you understand that. And there were 60 cameras around the ceiling. It was totally crazy. There were 60 cameras around doing a thing called motion capture. They put dots on our face. We had to wear these rubber swimsuits, you know, these rubber suits, speedos. They glued bathing caps to our heads, and they glued 152 dots to our face every day. I hope you follow it, but it was that crazy.
Wow. You know,
yeah.
I figured
it was
totally
crazy.
I figured it was just kind of like a regular animation thing where you just go into
It wasn't. It was much more complex.
Wow.
Yeah, it was the first whole film that was ever motion capture. It was the first one ever.
Wow. Yeah. Impressive.
That is impressive.
It was weird. It's definitely strange.
And it is. It's a great, great movie.
Oh, thank you so much.
Did we see it in IMAX or no?
No, I don't think we saw it in the regular theater. I remember we.
Yeah, if you can see it in IMAX, if you know, because it's incredible in IMAX. You know, you see the snowflakes coming towards you, and the train comes towards you. It's 3D. It's so unbelievable.
And didn't Tom Hanks do like 100 voices?
He did. Well, he was five different roles in it, five different characters in it.
Let me ask you something.
Sure.
All right. Aerosmith did play one of the elves, right?
Yes, exactly. That's Steven. Yeah, Steven Tyler.
Was he...
He's one of the guys there, yeah.
Did you see him, or was that...
No, I never got to meet him, unfortunately, but that is him.
That's so funny.
Have a good eye, Jess.
Thanks.
Very brief cameo he does.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm usually really good with the cameos.
Oh, okay.
Okay, let me ask you about this. You are in one episode of The Facts of Life, one of my favorite shows growing up.
Mindy was the only girl in that one, I think. Mindy Cohn, and I later did Scooby-Doo episodes with her. She's a very nice girl, but she was the only one in there. I bet the little girl was there, Kim Fields. She came on the set. Big breath, by the way. She gave me a big hug. That's little Tootie. And I mean, it was very erotic, but it was little Tootie, you know. I met them all but Blair. I never met Blair. And I met the one that was who's Nancy McKeon. I met her. She was very nice.
Joe.
Yeah. But, exactly. Joe, right.
Yeah, she played all those Lifetime beat up.
Exactly right. She gets beat by her husband and all the Lifetime stuff. Right? Every woman on Lifetime gets beat by her husband.
I know.
It's Lifetime.
Yes, yes. You get beat by your husband and you kind of you overcome it somehow.
We overcome
exactly,
it.
Yes. Exactly, exactly right. No woman is ever treated good on Lifetime.
I know.
It's very depressing, really.
I know.
It is.
What the hell are they trying to do?
You know what it does?
What
it
really
makes
is the message?
It makes us feel better about our own lives, is what it
does.
Yes,
is that right?
You're probably right.
Sure, my husband just doesn't hold the door open for me. At least he's not beating me.
Exactly.
Okay. So, Eddie, there's a movie I want to ask you about that you're not in.
Sure.
All right. Why, at this time, you're playing all of these nerd roles, right?
Right.
Now, why are you not in Revenge of the Nerds?
Good question, Dan. Very astute question. I get it all the time. I did a movie called The Whoopi Boys with Paul Rodriguez. Terrible movie. Paul Rodriguez, Sandra Bernhardt was in it, and she got mad and left the set. But Marshall Warfield was in it. Nice cast, but it totally tanked. It's called The Whoopi Boys. If you can see it, it's got a few laughs in it. But anyway, those are the guys that did it. Adam Field was the producer, and those are the guys that did Revenge of the Nerds. So I went to the producer, I go, you know, I have to ask you a question. Why was I not in Revenge of the Nerds? They go, we knew you. We knew about you. You really are like that. Because this is me. I really am a nerd. I really act like this and talk like this. This is me.
Right.
He goes, the joke of the film was we went to get regular guys like Anthony Edwards and Robert Carradine and dress them up and make them into nerds. He goes, that was part of the joke of the film. He goes, if we had you, you would just be a nerd playing a nerd. He goes, we wanted to get regular guys and make them into playing nerds. That's what he said. That was the excuse he gave me anyway.
Did you buy that excuse?
Maybe not. I would love to have been in it because it's such a great movie. Yeah. But I get recognized for that all the time. Are you the guy in Revenge of the Nerds? Are you Pee Wee Herman? Those are the two I get.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
That's funny hilarious. Because you want to
I once had these tough guys. It was like a halfway house. There were, you know, these thugs in a halfway house. They're doing, like, getting rehabilitated. So I was walking down the street, and there were these tough guys come out and say, hey, it's Pee Wee Herman. I go, oh, no, no, sir. My name's Eddie Deason. I'm an actor, too. I just look like Pee Wee. Go, oh, no, you're Pee Wee Herman. No, no, my name's Eddie Deason. I'm different. There was a little bit of hostility and tension in the air. They were, like, circling me. You know, come on, you're Pee Wee Herman. And I realized this is getting a little bit dangerous. I go, you know what? You're right. You got me. I am Pee Wee Herman. And I go, I am Pee Wee. Yeah, they were placated and they left. But I realized if I kept denying it, these guys might have beat me up or something. They were like these ex-prison guys, these thugs. And I had to tell them I was Pee Wee Herman to make sure they were happy.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's excellent. Oh. Okay, there's another movie that I have seen you in. It's called... Now, this movie is, I find, unique because Eddie, I believe, he's the lead character. It's Mob Boss.
Oh, with Morgan Fairchild. It was great.
Yeah. Now,
I got to make out with Morgan Fairchild, one of the highlights of my life. He's a great kisser, by the way. And this is the easiest question. You ever think of what's the easiest question you ever answered in your life?
Mm.
This was mine. Morgan and I were in the scene. We were, you know, the old comedy guy, the beautiful girl kisses the guy and he turns around and his glasses are steamed up, you know?
Yes.
You know, that's fake. Okay. Morgan and I were doing it. I have to make out. She kisses me passionately. I turn around, my glasses are steamed up. So Fred goes, can you go? Morgan turns to me. She goes, do you want to rehearse? And I go, Morgan Fairchild wants to make out with me. I go, yeah, yeah, let's rehearse. So she goes, I'm going to turn your head this way. So she gives me a big kiss on the cheek. She goes, no, wait. Now, when my scene, she goes, I want you to turn me this way. She gives me a big, long kiss, passionate kiss, da-da-da. She goes, now in the scene, the camera's going to be this way. We're going to kiss like this. She kisses me again. So I'm making out with Morgan Fairchild. It was one of the great moments of my life.
Oh, my goodness.
And then one day, Morgan, she was a very sweet girl. She was very sweet and shy. She'd always eat alone in her dressing room every day. One day, she comes up to me, she goes, Eddie, do you want to have lunch with me?
Oh.
Of course, being a guy, you know how guys might. I think, my God, I'm going to have an affair with Morgan Fairchild.
Yes, yes.
Actually, a girl's inviting me to her dressing room. Like, every guy in the world thinks she wants to have sex with me. So I get in. She just wanted to talk. She was very sweet. She talked to me for like an hour and a half. She told me about her whole life, her whole career. She was very sweet. But I just think she was lonely and she wanted to talk. And she was very sweet.
Huh. Interesting.
Wasn't she just in something like recently, like a television show or something?
Oh, she pops up all over the place.
I think I saw her. You're right. I saw her in something, Jeff, but I don't remember what it was.
I don't remember
right,
either.
I know she was on Friends a few years ago, but she was on something else. You're right.
Hmm. So, I'll have to look that up later.
So when you were making that movie, did you feel like any added pressure since you had such a big role?
In Mob Boss?
Yeah.
No, no. I mean, I love Fred Olin. He was such a wonderful director. There was, you know, he's one of the best directors ever. So I didn't really feel bad. Fred let me use cue cards. I'd have my little index cards around, and, you know, I memorized my lines as best I could, but I still used little cue cards on that one, too. Yeah, and Morgan was just a pleasure to work with. She was a great straight woman. She was wonderful.
You know what? I'd like, for a second, I'd like to, like, get off the actual, like, what the movies are. And you know what? Tell me how it is to be an actor. Tell me how it is for that to be your job, to get up, to go, to play someone else, to have a big party in Greece for 2 months. How is that, like, a job?
Well, okay. Now, that's a very good question, and I'll give you a very honest answer. First of all, don't get the idea that it's such a happy life or fun life. You got to remember, Jeff, I'd say 99.99% of them never work. So if you get into business, you got to be crazy. It's supply and demand. You see, like, you know, you see on screen, you see, this is John Travolta, this is Al Pacino, you know, this is Woody Allen. These are such a microcosm of the business. I know a million actors, and 99% of them never work. So it's a very tough business. It's tough on the ego. You get rejected all the time. I've actually been more lucky than most. I've had a lot of work, so I've been lucky. I never achieved real stardom, but I've always been a, quote, working actor, you know. But believe me, it's the toughest field in the world. It's very tough. But on the other side, excuse me, I have a lozenge in my mouth because I don't want to lose my voice. On the other side of the coin, the rewards are so great. You meet, you know, I've met, like, the biggest stars in the world. I've met so many of them. They're all wonderful, by the way. The biggest stars are almost always the nicest people, but you get that. The money's unreal. You know, you do a little thing. I'll go in for a little voiceover, da-da-da. You get $475 for 5 minutes. I did a Rice Krispies thing. You go in for, like, 20 minutes. They'll give you a, you know, I'm not going to throw figures, but it's huge amounts, you know, if you do a commercial or a movie. The money, we're so overpaid, you know, we're the most overpaid people in the world.
Wow.
So that's definitely true, too. You meet the greatest people, but the other, you know, it's like, it's yin and yang. It's very tough. The one side of it, it's heartbreaking. It's very tough. But the other side is, if you do make it or you get work, the rewards are the greatest rewards in the world, you know.
Wow, that's awesome. I mean, hard, but awesome, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a mixed bag, you know.
Hmm. Okay. You have any follow-up for that, Jess? Anything else? I'm about to ask him about Dorf, so I don't want to interrupt.
Oh, Tim Conway, yeah.
No, please. Let's move on to Dorf.
Okay.
Which, by the way, I just make an example. You sound like you're a beautiful woman. I've never seen, but you sound like a very cute girl. So I just say the life of a beautiful woman is kind of like a mixed bag. You know, you're a beautiful woman. That's a pleasure. But, you know, you have guys hitting on you. All these guys hitting on you all the time. You know, you go through this. You know what I mean? If you're a plain-looking woman, you don't have to worry about it. You know what I mean? The greatest things in life that are apparently the greatest things, there might be a few strings attached. You know, I think that's the lesson.
Oh, Eddie, I think I'm blushing.
Okay, you know what I mean?
She is a beautiful woman.
No. So you know about that, Jeff.
I'll have to direct you to my MySpace.
In other words, you walk down the street alone, you're going to have guys bugging you. Going to the store, you sit alone. Guys going to bug you. Whereas, let's say you're not that cute, you just sit and nobody cares, you know. But all girls want to be a beautiful woman. Nobody doesn't want to be a beautiful woman, you know, if you're a girl, you know.
That's true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's true. I have to beat them off with sticks.
That's right.
It's a very hard life.
Well, me too. I beat them off with toothpicks.
Okay. So, now I've seen Tim Conway in concerts. I've seen him do Dorf Live.
Right.
What's it like to do? You did two Dorf videos, is that what it was, too?
Yes, and he was wonderful, yeah.
So, all right. So how does he do it?
What it is he gets on his knees, he kneels down on his knees, and they have shoes attached to his kneecaps. They hide the back of his legs, and that's how it is. You see, he doesn't walk around that much. He just stays there. I don't know how he ever walks, but he does it all on his knees. And I think when he walks, he must walk on his knees, I guess. But they have shoes on his kneecaps. That's how it is.
So do you have any Tim Conway stories?
I'm trying to think. He was just the nicest guy in the world. Because when I was a kid, he was one of my heroes. And I'm trying to think. I had to drive a car and that. I couldn't drive. He was very easy to laugh. He was a wonderful guy. You know, I just remember talking to him, and I hate to sound monotonous, but these stars are usually the nice guys, and Tim is exceptionally, exceptionally nice. He's just, there's nice people, and he's the nicest of the nice. He's just the nicest man you could ever imagine. That was Tim Conway.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I want to know all these people.
Oh.
Yeah, they're
well, great. You know, we're starting off with knowing Eddie.
I'm going to say, well, we're starting off. We've got Eddie on the line right now.
Oh, it's my honor. It's a pleasure to be here. But you know what's funny? You hear these stories, you know, about the big stars. You see these movies. They're all prima donnas, you know. Or you read the tabloids, how rotten they are. And I have found in 30 years in showbiz, just the reverse, the biggest stars are the nicest people. Almost one for one, they're the nicest people right down the line.
That's so funny because you're right. You know, we all have this persona with these people because of the tabloids, and
yeah, you
know,
the women are all divas and all this stuff, but I've never found it that way.
Wow, that's you know what, you should go and like contact the tabloids and let them know.
Yeah, really, like they would listen. You know?
Yeah, I know.
Well, you know, it's their bread and butter. Their bread and butter is to write the dirt, you know, and that's how they make their money.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know?
Okay, Eddie.
Mm-hmm.
Now you said that you are the world's biggest Beatles fan.
Go ahead, fire me a question.
Okay, all right. Now, you know, I've been to your site, and I looked at your quiz, right? Yeah. And I'm a Beatles fan myself.
Okay.
And that quiz that you have is off the charts difficult.
I think
Paul ridiculous.
And Ringo wouldn't get the answers to that. Well, you know the great story. Ringo played trivia. Ringo got Beatles Trivia Pursuit. He was playing it. And he said he was missing questions left and right, so he didn't get any of the questions right. This is Ringo.
That is awesome.
And then there's one other great story. Paul met this girl. And Paul goes, you know, you and John wrote this song. I forget what the song is, like Paperback Writer or whatever. She goes, you and John wrote this song about such and such and such. And Paul goes, oh, no, that's not right. John and I wrote this song about such and such. And she goes, no, it was. And Paul goes, no, it wasn't. And she goes, no, I took a course, though. I took a course in the Beatles with such and such. You're wrong. He's telling McCartney how he wrote his song.
That is so funny.
Okay, now I happen to have here, Jessica is going to give you a little Beatles quiz.
Okay.
And we'll see how you do.
Okay, Jessica.
But I have the utmost faith in you.
Okay.
Go ahead, Jessica.
All right. Now, I just want you to know that if I were researching and doing these questions, they'd be a lot harder.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, I believe you.
I know half of them myself, so I'm sure Eddie's just going to knock it down.
I know, right?
Okay, well, if you want to throw in the tough ones, go ahead, because I like any of them.
Okay, well, I'm just going to go in order here for what Dan's got.
All
right, question one.
Uh-huh.
What was the Beatles' first single in 1962?
Oh, Love Me Do, October 5th, 1962.
Wow.
That was quick.
Not only the answer, but the date.
I know. That was amazing.
That's awesome.
All right. Where did you find these questions?
Look,
section?
I just got a quiz, and then I brought it in.
All right. Okay. Sorry,
Ed. What was Ringo's last name? I know. His name was Stein.
What was Paul McCartney's middle name?
Paul.
Yes.
Paul McCartney.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Who was the title?
What?
Oh, I'm sorry. What was the title of the Beatles manager Brian Epstein's autobiography?
A Cellar Full of Noise. Which John Lennon said it should be a cellar full of boys, but let's not digress.
That is correct. I mean, I don't even have to tell you that's correct. Yeah, no, he's like, just so you know, this is the answer.
John also had another, John said he should call it queer Jew. That was his other suggestion, but that's what he really said.
Queer Jew, that's evil. All right, which Beatles album consisted only of Lennon-McCartney compositions?
Hard Day's Night.
Excellent.
My favorite movie of all time, by the way.
That's awesome. Didn't we see that just a couple years ago?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we did.
We did. All right, which actor appeared in 3 Beatles films?
That was, what's his name? I know the guy. Victor Spinetti. I met him. He's a nice guy. Met him at a Beatle Fest.
Phenomenal. We used to listen to, one of the old-time radio stations down here. What was it?
Beatle Brunch, yes.
And they would talk about Beatle Fest all the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah,
we love those shows.
Yeah.
Breakfast with the Beatles, and we have lunch with the Beatles, but I love listening to them.
Well, it's awesome because, you know, they have a theme. Every show was, you know, things Paul hated, you know. It was always very cool. We haven't listened to it, I think, because we don't wake up at that early on Sundays anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It was like 9 o'clock on Sundays.
Vegas?
Oh, okay. If you can go see the Beatles show, see the Love show at Cirque du Soleil, you have to see it if you're a Beatles fan.
Oh, wow.
You will die. You've never seen anything like this. It's so unbelievable. I can't even describe it, but you got to see it.
That's awesome because you know what? We're heading over there for a radio convention.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Take it in.
April.
It's at the Mirage.
Awesome.
Fantastic. Yeah. Okay.
Any reason to go to the Mirage, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like you need a reason. Go ahead.
Okay. Which Beatles song holds the record for the most versions recorded by different artists?
Yesterday.
Wow. not even skipping a beat.
I know. I love it.
All right. In which year was the Beatles' last live performance?
1966, August 29th.
Wow. I'm amazed. All right. Who gave the Beatles their name in April 1960?
Well, it was John, basically. John brought up the name.
Correct?
Yeah.
Question 9. Which was the last album recorded by the Beatles?
The last one recorded was Abbey Road.
That is correct.
Yeah. The last released was Let It Be, but Abbey Road was the last they recorded.
This guy is phenomenal. Which pop artist designed the cover of the White Album?
That was, oh, God, you're coming. The White Album?
The White Album.
Something Sergeant Pepper?
No. Nope.
Something just a blank cover.
I mean,
I could design that.
Unfortunately, Eddie Deason is not one of the choices.
Okay, well, who designed the White? I mean, I thought it was John and Yoko's idea. The White Album was... I'll bite on that one. I don't know. Who designed the White Album?
Do you want some multiple choices?
Yeah, give me multiple choices.
Well, we've got Andy Warhol.
Right.
Peter Blake.
Peter Blake.
Bridget Riley or Richard Hamilton.
Who's the last one?
Richard Hamilton.
Peter Blake. It's Blake or Hamilton. I'm going to guess Peter Blake.
Are you sure?
Yeah, that's what I would guess. That's what I think.
All right, you don't think maybe it was the other one you thought it was?
Hamilton?
Yes.
I'm totally shocked. Are you sure he designed that white cover, you mean?
You know what? I'm not sure. It's just what it says right here.
That's I'd like to clarify that. We could look it up on Google. It's just a blank white cover. Nothing really to design.
You know, I'm willing to...
There's the collage inside. They had a collage poster. Maybe that's what they mean.
Yeah, right.
You mean you've seen the white album. Right?
Absolutely.
There's nothing to design.
No, you know what? I'm almost like... thinking that you're right.
Yeah, I think this quiz is wrong.
Yes.
All right, number 12. The Beatles.
What answer do they have, Jeff?
Oh, are you gonna look? Are you gonna look it up? Google it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Google it.
No, he asked what answer do they have.
What does it say on the quiz?
Oh, yeah, it says Richard Hamilton.
Yes.
Oh, Hamilton. Okay. No, I totally didn't know that. If it's true.
Well, we're gonna look it up for you.
Okay, I'm sure. Look up Richard Hamilton. Google him or look up Peter Blake. Yeah, it's interesting.
That is.
Okay.
All right, the Beatles had a record 17... What?
17.
I'm sorry. I don't know how to read.
Yes.
The Beatles had a record 17 UK number one hits, which was the group's only single between 1963 and 1969 that failed to reach the top of the charts.
That was Penny Lane was on one side and Strawberry Fields.
Wow.
Yeah, which was maybe their best single ever.
I know.
You know what beat it, right?
No, what beat it?
Engelbert Humperdinck's Release Me.
Oh, my God.
Never quite got over that. It's a very humbling experience.
Oh. Phenomenal. Okay.
All right. Question 13. Who played lead guitar on Ticket to Ride?
Oh, boy, you got me. That's a tough one. Let me see. It's got to be George or John. I'm going to say, was it George?
No.
It was John?
No.
Paul?
Yes.
Was it Paul? Okay, very good. You totally got me. That I did not know. That's one of my favorite songs.
Wow.
What do you know?
You know what?
Beautiful intro.
I'm thinking maybe
beautiful
not.
Beautiful fade out at the end.
I think this quiz is wrong, Eddie.
No, you totally stumped me. I didn't know that.
All right. Question 14, and I think we've got two more.
Okay.
Which of these Beatles songs was not banned by the BBC?
Okay.
A Day in the Life,
mm-hmm.
Dr. Robert,
mm-hmm.
Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds,
mm-hmm.
The Ballad of John and Yoko.
I think it was, what's the list again? It was the second one. What was it?
Dr. Robert?
Yes, Dr. Robert.
Correct.
Yeah. It was about a drug dealer, but I don't think they knew that nobody knew it.
All right, last one.
All right.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Uh-huh.
Which Beatles song did Frank Sinatra describe as the greatest love song ever written?
Something.
You got it.
Yeah, very good. That was a great quiz.
All right.
That was
awesome. You got me on the one. You got me.
Good job. Good
yep.
job.
Yay! Well, thanks. That was fun. I liked it.
All right. Okay, Eddie, I've got a personal favor
sure.
to ask. Could you do me a favor and just please say, this is Eddie Deason, and you're listening to Talk Radio X?
Sure. Hi, this is Eddie Deason, and you're listening to Talk Radio X.
Oh, that was awesome.
That's great. Excellent.
It's like going to be my favorite little loop.
I know. We're going to use that one all the time.
All right.
Eddie, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. I so appreciate you spending so much time with us and telling us all of your experiences in Hollywood.
Totally my pleasure.
Great stories, Eddie.
It was a great time. I love you both. It was a very fun time. And Dan, if you ever want again, just email me. If you ever want me on again, it'll be my pleasure.
Oh,
okay,
great.
Fantastic.
Guys are great.
Will
great.
Do.
Awesome.
Okay, have a great year, you guys.
You too.
Okay, see you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Well.
Eddie Deason,
everybody. There he was. The man himself.
Eddie Deason.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm still concentrating on the fact that I dropped the phone.
I know.
As always. I'm dropping other things as well.
I know. Sit still.
The problem is that we have the most awkwardly designed studio, although that's changing soon.
That is changing.
In fact, this weekend is the big weekend.
That was such a great interview.
Oh, it was a great interview. See? Oh, I know. You know why it was a great interview, right? Because I know how to pick people. That's what it is.
Yeah.
I know how to pick people who have things to say. Who have something to talk about. Okay. Anyway. Coming up. Speaking of people who have things to say. In about 8 minutes. Check it out. It's Hooter and Greenway. And
The H to the G.
H to the G. And you know, those guys always put on a fantastic show. Coming up at 10 o'clock, so you only got about 7 minutes. So now is the time to go and get something to drink. But leave the radio on, because I still have things to talk about here.
Right.
I want to wrap it up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, let us feel like, you know.
Right.
We're playing in the background.
Oh, always playing in the background. Now, I've got a few movie things that are on my mind that I'd like to get off my chest before we get off. A lot of times, we do the show, right? And we get off on so many side trips and tangents that I do not get to everything. You know, often that happens. And you know what happens to those stories? I throw them away. I don't ever do them.
Oh, that's so
unless sad. Unless they're really good, then I must bring it over. But a lot of times it's like, okay, I don't need it.
You know, I feel like that's a big part of that is me. I'm very much a side tracker.
Well, okay, but it's not a complaint because it doesn't mean, oh, no, that we failed because we didn't talk about, I don't know, some crappy movie that I don't know.
You know what? Let's stop discussing how we never get to discuss
right?
this stuff and discuss this stuff.
Okay. Now, I don't know if you know this, but I'm all about one particular TV to movie adaptation, and I'm usually not into any of them. I've got two of them to talk about tonight, but there's new news regarding the Get Smart one. And you know, I'm all about it.
All about the Get Smart.
I'm all about it. And in case you're not hip, Steve Carell is playing Maxwell Smart. And I am down with that choice. That
do you think it's the best choice?
I can't think of anybody better.
Okay.
I remember a few years ago, me and Eric were trying to cast it, and we couldn't come up with somebody who was, like, perfect for that role. And we sat, and we could cast everybody else. But we, getting smart was the toughest one.
Let me ask you something. Do you think he's that Steve Carell is close to perfect, or you think dead on perfect?
I think he's close to perfect. I'll have to see him in the role before
true.
I know.
True,
but
true.
I mean, like when I heard that, I was like, oh.
That's fine.
Yeah, you. It's going to be hard to do much better than that.
That's true.
Okay. Now, Anne Hathaway is going to be 99 from The Princess Diaries.
That's a great cast.
That's fine. That's fine.
Don't worry. Mm-hmm. You're not going to see her boobies.
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
Okay.
No boobies.
Because,
smart.
All right. Maybe. I don't know. Anyway, 99 is probably the easiest role to cast. Just any competent chick is fine. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you don't want, you know, any Jessica Simpson or Mandy
Moore.
Oh,
yeah. You can screw it up. That's true. Like I said, you're someone competent. That's it. All right. Now they've added to the mix. They're now bringing in The Rock. And he's going to be playing a new character, Agent 23. Now, when I first read that The Rock was going to be in it, I thought, oh, wow, maybe he's going to be Jaime.
And maybe we could have had
Dick Gauthier
back on to decide to discuss what he thought of it.
Right. The original Jaime, who was on the live test show a couple months back. But apparently, no, it's a new character. Maybe, well, who knows? Maybe Agent 23 will be a robot, though. Because that would be, that would be great casting. And also, they've added Terrence Stamp. Now, he's been playing a villain. They didn't say if he's Siegfried or not, but he's playing a bad guy.
Is Siegfried the main bad guy?
Yes, he was
Is he like Dr. Claw on...
He's not... He's kind of like the chaos counterpart to get to Maxwell Smart, you know?
Oh, so he works for...
He works for, like, the bad agency. There's, like, an evil agency that they're fighting called Chaos.
Okay.
All right? Max works for Control.
Okay.
Okay. So...
Control!
Yeah, no, that has nothing to
different
do with...
Different one?
Yeah, it's a different kind of control.
Okay.
That's the kind that, you know, you shouldn't do again, by the way.
Control!
Yeah, no, that... No, stop that. No more of that, okay?
No.
All right.
Sorry.
On the other side of TV to movie adaptations, here's one I could care less about, although the casting is mildly interesting. For some reason, people have decided, hey, let's make a Magnum P.I. movie. I don't understand this. I really don't get it. I watched
Where
that show.
Tom Selleck?
Tom Selleck? I don't know. He's like 60 years old. What do you want him to do?
Yeah, but look at, what's his face? Other Tom Selleck.
The other Tom Selleck?
Yeah.
Who's the other Tom Selleck?
You know, Longest Yard and...
Burt Reynolds?
Burt Reynolds. Like, hey, he's still around. He still does stuff.
You're comparing Burt Reynolds and Tom Selleck?
Yeah. Mustaches, you know.
Oh, okay. They have mustaches.
From, like, that time.
Uh-huh. So, Peter Sellers? He was around in the 70s.
Mm. He didn't have a mustache.
Peter Sellers didn't have... Well, in some movies, he had a mustache. Inspector Clouseau. I don't know.
Yeah, but those two were mustaches.
They were mustaches.
They were mustaches.
In Deliverance, Burt Reynolds does not have a mustache.
I know, it, and it's very creepy.
So looking. In your face.
Well, you know what? I haven't seen Deliverance only for about 15 minutes.
Yeah, because you're a baby.
I can't take it.
Ugh, all right. Anyway, Matthew McConaughey is tapped to play. Now, this is all rumor, but supposedly it's cast. You're going to have McConaughey playing Magnum P.I., all right? Now, if you were a big fan of the movie Sahara.
I am.
And I know Jessica is, and I enjoyed that film as well. There's a little Sahara reunion, because you have Steve Zahn would be playing Rick, and then you'd have William H. Macy playing Higgins.
Oh, there you go.
Okay.
That's great.
Right? And also, Tyrese Gibson would be playing T.C. You got to kind of know the show to know who those people are.
I don't know.
Which I do. Nonetheless, I don't know. I guess if it looked good, I probably would go see it, but I just... Why? That's what I say.
Well,
why?
You know what? That
we got
is,
less than a minute,
like
by the way.
Miami Vice thing, you know?
Yeah, well, at least that one, that's Michael Mann doing something. And that's a guy who's an absolute... Okay, there's a guy... It just so happens that the guy who did Miami Vice happened to be a visionary director.
Mm-hmm.
So when I hear that he's actually going to do it himself, okay, I'll give a pass on that.
Yeah, but, I mean, the movie stunk.
That's fine. But
at least he could redo it.
But at least it was I believe that his attempt was an honest and sincere and earnest one, and not box office motivated. I think he said, "You know what? I really like this concept that we had back then, and I want to do something more with it." You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
Anyway, we're out of time. Hooter and Greenway are coming up next. I want to thank once again Eddie Deason for being our guest. And Jessica, say goodnight.
Goodnight.
Yamma, 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 yamma. Whoopee-doo, Scooby-Doo, and gobbledygook.